You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
All facts, no fiction. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:06 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. We hope you are having a great day. If you're listening in Hayward on WBZH or in Appleton and Oshkosh on WISS or in La Crosse on WLCX, thank you so much for joining us. We always appreciate it. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. If you want to get involved in the program, you can. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Remember, keep listening throughout the day. New words in our multi-state text-to-win contest will be coming your way later on. Also, if you want to see, Jamie and I have been out having fun.
We have.
Separately, and soon we will have fun together. But Jamie released yesterday, in honor of Pi Day, she went out in the snow. My parental instincts kicked in. When you watch the video, you will see why. But Jamie went out and did a pie tasting. In honor of Pi Day. So that video is up on our brand new Facebook and Instagram pages. You can go and look up Daybreak with Brian and Jamie and watch Jamie eat pie and find out how you
can get pie, because it's a local place. So everybody needs to go take some pie. So you can definitely check it out, but we would love for you to do that. And you have a video going up today as well.
I have a video coming up today. It will be released right after this program. Well, it's on in honor of St. Patrick's Day.
Love it.
I did what all good Irishmen do on St. Patrick's Day. I did a Irish whiskey taste test and a ranking, and so that will be up. That was a lot of fun to record, as you can imagine. And it amazed me how much whiskey I actually just had sitting around the house.
I didn't even have to try very hard for this one.
I had to winnow it down and figure out which ones I was going to talk about. But
love it.
So yes, that's coming out, and we put up our clips from the show, and we put up interviews and all the news stuff too. But we also are human beings like you and do other things, and we want to give you something to maybe just take a break a little bit and go, oh, look, these Jamie and Brian are real people, and they do real people's things.
Yes, absolutely.
We don't just sit in a box and yell about
politics, right? No, we try not to anyway. But check us out on Facebook and Instagram, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie. If you're so inclined, give us a like so that you can stay up to date, and a follow so that you can stay up to date on all of the things that we're doing. I don't know. Maybe we do have shenanigans. You know, we were just talking about that in our show within the show. If you listen on the stream, it's one of my favorite words, shenanigans. So I try to use
it whenever I can. Nothing wrong with some shenanigans. And as the weather gets warmer and we are outdoors more, the shenanigans will continue. And we hope you enjoy them. And let us know. You can leave a comment there, too. That always helps us. All right. I'm wondering, Jamie, if this is a good sign or just more bluster. But, you know, we complain all the time about Donald Trump going back and relitigating the 2020 election and going back to 2016 and going back. Well, we're not the only ones complaining about this. It seems like some Republican GOP state and county chairs and their strategists are starting to think that this is not good for the Republican Party. It is hurting down-ticket messaging and down-ticket candidates. And they are hoping, not so quietly, that he cuts this out. Stop it.
Well, somebody's going to have a much stronger conversation with him, because as we've seen, this administration has no intentions of doing so. But they essentially just want him to move on is essentially what the message is coming from the different party chairs. The president, though, as we know, he's not going to let it go. He's subpoenaed the 2020 election records. He's put pressure on lawmakers to pass legislation to overhaul registration laws. There is a growing view inside the party, though, that focuses on that focusing on the stolen election claims and voter fraud is going to kneecap them in the general election. And they're warning the administration that while that messaging might play out well with the base voter in the primary, it's going to alienate the moderates who are tired of just rehashing an election from nearly 6 years ago. What do we always say on this program? Was it this 6 years ago? When did we warp back in time?
You won a subsequent election.
Yeah.
So
move on. Move on.
And it's also so obvious when you whine that, oh, so they're only fixed when you win. That,
right.
It does my heart good. Not that I'm backing or thinking that these Republicans
right.
will be better, but at least it's showing that on the state level, Republicans are going,
right.
This is not the thing.
Yeah.
This is not what we want to be known for anymore. It didn't happen. Get over yourself and let us do what we need to do for our party here.
Yeah. I just wish it hadn't taken 6 years for them to get there, but I guess better late than never. Who knows? But we have to remember something with this. The president has tried to sow all of this discord here in Wisconsin, too, which is why mm-hmm. this is an important conversation. He's claimed that more people voted than were actually registered in the state. That claim has been examined again and again, and it simply just isn't true. Republican Speaker Robin Voss launched that investigation into the 2020 election. He hired the former Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman to lead it. And if you remember, Brian, that didn't turn out so well because Gableman's investigation produced absolutely no evidence that the election was stolen. And earlier this year, he actually agreed to surrender his law license for 3 years after multiple misconduct violations that were tied to that exact same election investigation. Facts are pretty clear. The elections were not stolen. And that's why it's good to see, and again, credit where credit's due. Sometimes it's hard, but it's good to see that some members of the GOP are starting to finally acknowledge that part of reality and telling the president to move on. In fact, one Pennsylvania-based GOP strategist and Trump convention delegate who hosted a meeting of fake electors back in 2020 at his public affairs firm says that it would be better if the midterms focused on the recovery of the economy and all the good things the Republican administration and Congress are doing to move the economy forward. So
there it is.
Yeah.
Please focus on this, I don't know how you focus on the economy and try to sell it as a good thing when everybody is looking at their grocery cart going, we need to put that back.
Mm-hmm.
And I know but gas prices are gas prices.
Yeah.
People are looking at that. So you can't spin that. And hey, you waited too long to make your break for the midterms. The messaging isn't going to resonate in the next, 6 months. It's just not.
No.
So
especially with the war yes. that's ongoing with no end in sight, that's just basically taking any economy, maybe of recovery message, and just it's not even a slow dwindle. It is like hit a cliff. It is right off the edge at this point because that's what happened. You made a strategic error, and now you're going to live with those ramifications, I guess.
Well, as we talked about earlier in the show, the Fed's not going to lower interest rates. They may actually go up. Everything is not hunky-dory with the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that you just want – you know what's coming.
Right.
You know that being tied to this president in the midterms – most likely is going to lead to a shift in the Congress.
Right.
And that terrifies you because suddenly, man, there's a storm of accountability coming.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are going to get swept up in that storm.
Yeah, which is why I think we're seeing this president turn his sights on more. It was stolen. 2020 was a stolen. This is why we need tighter laws, because obviously Maricopa County, Arizona's largest county, has come under attack from the Trump administration. They have subpoenaed records just weeks after the FBI raided the warehouse outside of Atlanta. Trump has also revisited all of the grievances that the 2020 election was rigged. He's bringing these up again in what are these rally speeches that he's doing across the country right now. He's even suggested that Republicans should nationalize elections. And of course, he is demanding that the SAVE Act, a Save America Act, be passed, which would put in place even stricter voting requirements as their number one priority. And I think when you look at all of the relitigation of 2020 coupled with the Save America Act, it becomes a very scary subject for where our elections are going under this president. And it's not surprising, based on what he has said about rigged elections. But I think you need to really be paying attention. And I know we've talked a lot about this SAVE Act that has already passed the House. It should make its way to the Senate floor this week. But I think women especially need to really pay attention to this because it's being, I think, I don't want to say that it is being ignored, but I think a lot of women think that it's not going to affect them. And it is. If you are married, if you're divorced, if your name is changed, you're going to require documentation so that you can actually vote. And it's not going to be just undocumented voters. It is going to be all women of all persuasions who have changed their name for some reason. So I think there's this illusion that, oh, that's not going to affect me. It's not going to be anything that I'm going to have. No, it is. It's absolutely going to affect any woman who's changed her name for any reason. And it's also going to make it harder for anybody to actually vote. And by the way, again, we'll point it out because facts kind of a thing around here. If you're undocumented, you already can't register to vote. That's not a thing.
I was going to bring that up. I'm glad you did because I've heard that, man, oh man, there's a lot of undocumented immigrants voting. They're voting like crazy. Their turnout actually higher than U.S. citizen turnout. That's what I've been told. So that's not right.
No, that is not right. Oh. And in fact, voter fraud in this country is less than 1% of the voting population. Less than 1%. I think it's like 0.01% of voter fraud that occurs in this country because of the laws that we already have in place to make sure that voting is safe and effective and, you know, citizens are actually voting.
And I know we're... Sometimes it feels like we're preaching to the choir because, but more people need to hear that. And
yes.
So sometimes I'm like, we keep repeating ourselves.
I know.
But it's like, the more you repeat yourself, you hope at least somebody else hears it and says, well, that can't be true. And then they can look it up and go, oh, well, what do you know? It was true. That's, who'd have thunk it?
You know, we live in a world where we have knowledge at our fingertips, right? I mean, that's the thing that is most troubling, I think, to me, is that this knowledge is at your fingertips. You carry it around in your pocket. You use it to make phone calls. You sit in front of a device, most of us do, at some point during the day where we're mindlessly scrolling through all of this crap that doesn't matter at all. How about you just maybe do a search? Just maybe see what's out there and what information you could actually find on all of this.
Could be. Ollie's been holding on. He's in the North Woods, and he's come out of the woods to call us at 855-75-CIVIC. Ollie, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Ollie's a she. But
Hi, Ollie.
I just wanted to comment that women are not going to be the only ones with an issue when it comes to voting because of the SAFE Act. There will be a lot of people, men and women, who will have a harder time voting because they are not going to, they're going to have to jump through hoops to get birth certificates and information if they were adopted. If they've never gotten information, this will put them on the chopping block too.
Yeah, thank you so much for the call. That's great.
Thank you.
And these are all things that we need to remember. At some point, this is going to affect a lot of people. There's a lot of people being targeted, but as Ollie gives us as a good reminder, could be men, too, who don't have a birth certificate.
And Tiffany from River Falls says, poll tax, poll tax, poll tax, unconstitutional.
Yes. 8:19 right now. You are listening to Daybreak. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. The 7th District here in Wisconsin did not endorse Trump's backed candidate. Who? What?
Scandal. Intrigue.
I'll tell you. Intrigue on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Across the state of Wisconsin, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie is back.
It's 8:22 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on the Civic Media Network. Hopefully you are having a great day, a little calm after the storm. It's cold outside in Wisconsin, but yes. Lots of sunshine today and a whole lot of snow now. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Good morning. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Happy St. Patrick's Day for everyone, I'm sure, except Michael Alfonso, who's not having a good day because, you know, he was endorsed by President Trump to take Tom Tiffany's spot in the 7th Congressional District. But the members of that caucus declined to endorse a candidate to replace Tom Tiffany, even though, like I said, the president has weighed in. The chairman of the Republican Party in that congressional district, which again, the 7th, Matt Russ, said that typically there would be several rounds of elimination votes at the caucus until the final vote revealed the candidate the group would endorse. Oh, man, all that work, all that butt smooching to get that endorsement. And it did not pay off.
No, what I love is that according to Russ, this rule was actually changed by members and a motion was made to not endorse a candidate at all. The vote was witnessed by those in attendance. It was certified by a parliamentarian. So it is official from a whole other district that parliamentarian was from. The meeting was held last weekend in Neillsville. Now, the vote took place without controversy, challenge, or objection, and it is accepted to be the expressed will of the delegation in attendance at the caucus. That is the official language. An endorsement vote may have communicated to voters who, you know, who has the most support amongst the delegates of the caucus, which is why the group may have held off on endorsing any single candidate. Now, in an email, Rust actually said as far as why they voted not to endorse, he's heard several reasons, but personally believes that because there is no clear identified front runner at the moment, a majority of the delegation just didn't feel comfortable choosing one person over another. He also said in this email that he felt that it could be more divisive than unifying for our general membership through the coming months if a single candidate was chosen. Honestly, here's what I'm going to say. Donald Trump has endorsed one of the candidates. We know this. It's Sean Duffy's son-in-law, Michael Alfonso. Was this about the delegation truly believing that nobody stood out quite enough yet to earn the endorsement? Or was this a way to avoid endorsing someone other than Trump's pick and then getting blasted on social media by the president? Because let's be honest, he does this. He throws himself even into minor party politics and blasts people on social media. And you just got to wonder if this was a way for this delegation to just be like, you know what? It's not even worth it.
Well, let's go back a half hour. We started this hour talking about how some Republican state and county commissioners, boards, leaders are trying to distance themselves or hoping the president will distance himself from relitigating 2020. This may be another way. Your point is exact, and it feeds into this. Let's avoid this altogether. And also, does the 7th district want another, and this is a direct quote from the president, another MAGA warrior representing them?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure they want another Republican, but do they want that MAGA label on top of it, seeing how numbers are pointing to the fact that's falling out of favor?
I mean, and let's be real, the 7th Congressional District is, in terms of land and the area that it covers, this is the state's largest, right? Mm-hmm. It covers a lot of central and northern Wisconsin. There are 5 Republicans and 3 Democrats in the race right now. So you've got Alfonso, the son-in-law, the mega warrior as proclaimed by the president. You've got another Republican, Jesse Eben, who is a public relations professional, lost the 2020 GOP primary. You've got another Republican in it, Paul Wasgren, who is a lawyer. You've got Kevin Hermaning, who is 66, a former chair of the Marathon County Republicans, former U.S. Marine. And then you've got another Republican, Nina Baum, who is the most recent entrant into the race, small business owner. And then you have 3 Democrats, Fred Clark, Chris Armstrong, and Ginger Murray in that particular race. But honestly, there's also a part of me that kind of respects the decision of the delegation to not endorse if they generally truly felt there wasn't a clear front runner, which might show a little independence from the president and what he is actually wanting in that district. But another part of me just kind of wonders if this was simply a way to just avoid that retribution, as we've talked about. And it says a lot about where the Republican Party is right now under the Trump administration, if that was any part of their thought process.
Well, and it also goes to show that when it comes to local politics, people worry about what's happening in their backyard. The people in the 7th Congressional District, while they pay attention to the national politics, their priority, as it should be, is on their district. And just because Donald Trump says that a 25-year-old whose father-in-law is part of the cabinet and a former lumberjack, let's not leave that out.
Road rules contestant, too.
Yeah. Oh, yes. That's a resume right there. That's, well, road and transportation, I guess that qualified him.
That's why he can run Space Force. He's got all of the qualifications.
But that, you know, just because the president endorses him, he's 25, we don't know. And people in the caucus are like, we don't need to count on him because he might not be the best person to represent us. And we're going to hold off and see. Maybe down the road he shows himself to be the best candidate.
From what I understand, he doesn't even really live in the district either. So maybe they're like, you know, he doesn't represent our values, who we are as a people, who we are as a community. And, I think, though, if it is anything to do with other than maybe a lack of qualification, not really knowing who the front runner is, and maybe it is something to do with some sort of presidential retribution, I think that says a lot about where our Republican Party as a whole stands, that they don't feel like they can make an honest assessment without getting mean posted about on social media, right? I mean, that's not how this is supposed to work in any anyway. It's 8:29 right now. This is Daybreak. I'm Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. We're going to talk film tax incentives with our own Pete Schwab after this. Listen to the bagpipes. It's the city.
Local voices. Statewide impact. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:35 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on the Civic Media Network. Brian, I think your heart would be happy if you were in the studio with me, because I'm watching the Irish festivities happen for St. Patrick's Day in Dublin, Ireland on my TV right now.
Oh, very nice.
There's a lot of fun stuff happening. Corned beef and cabbage, is that your thing? John's asking over on our social media feed today. Yes, no?
I am a corned beef sandwich. I did make a corned beef on Sunday. I'm having some leftover sandwiches today with a nice pint of Guinness Draft, and that's how I will celebrate. But after I, take my mom to the doctor.
Of course. Adult responsibilities and all that. Plus, it's Mama Noonan's birthday. So
It is her birthday. We took her out to a brewery on Saturday because at 89, she still wanted to kick back a few beers.
Love it.
The apple does not fall far from the tree. So it was a lot of fun. So, yes, I hope everybody enjoys their St. Patrick's Day. I hope our next guest can enjoy his day.
Yes.
He has shoveled out. He has he has cleared his sister's home and is back in his own place. The reason we're going to talk to Pete Schwab is because the creation of Wisconsin's Film Office and the $5 million film tax credit program is creating more opportunities for local filmmakers and productions to further expand, which is going to help Wisconsin stay on the map and gain some new followers as a growing film industry hub. So the governor explained the importance of the program, saying, quote, "It's a really important industry. People love film. They love arts in the state of Wisconsin. It shows that we believe it's a viable industry that employs all sorts of people, and it also sells our state." You know Pete Schwab. He's the host of Nightlight with Pete and Greg, that's heard here on the Civic Media Network from 5 to 7 every day. You probably also know that Pete is intimately connected with the film industry. He's the writer, director, and star of the feature film The Godfather of Green Bay. He also hosts Director's Cut on PBS. And so we got him up early because he's been battling the elements from his bunker somewhere in the north of Wisconsin. And he's here joining us now to talk about this. Pete, first of all, how much snow did you get where you're at?
I was just looking that up before. I've been saying we've gotten between 30 and 36 inches. It might be closer to 30, But it's, wow. I know, it's just the worst snowfall, I think, in my lifetime. Put some wind in there, yeah. And it was a nightmare. And but we got back to our own house about 10 o'clock last night because the winds had died down. We still had power. And after the internet went out briefly for a few hours, we got that back, too. So I can't believe we're back as soon as we are, but it feels good. I just want to say,
yeah.
You did a great job convincing people you're Irish, Brian, when you really are not.
I'm a Somali immigrant.
It's Nuninsky, and you know it, and you shortened it when you got to Ellis Island, and well done.
Thank you. Ixnay on the honesty piece. Ixnay. I got a whole brand built up.
This is why you don't invite friends to the show, though, either. They know all the secrets,
They know the secrets. And now what's funny is there's some conspiracy theorists who are actually looking that up now. I knew it.
Yeah, right.
He is so full of it.
His name is Schwamba, and he's more Irish than Nuninsky. What the heck?
Well, Pete, like I said, we appreciate you being here. So
yeah, thanks for
you
asking.
You made a film here in Wisconsin. So when you hear about this, the Wisconsin Film Office and the Film Tax Credit Program, what's your first reaction, and how do you think it's going to affect filmmaking in this state?
You know, my first reaction was, it's about time. And I was very thankful to a lot of the people that kind of put the wheels in motion. People that have been on Nightlight, Jeffrey Kurz, who is a former Miramax executive who lives in Milwaukee now and make films, Nathan Deming, who's been on, I think, maybe your show too, or other Civic Media shows as well. I've known Nathan for years. And a whole host of people that really were just kind of very diligent in keeping after this. And it's a bipartisan bill. It should have passed. There's no reason for this not to pass. In terms of how it affects filmmakers, that's an interesting question, because I feel like Wisconsin filmmakers are very loyal to Wisconsin. They haven't left. They want to be here, so they're going to find ways to make their films. Now, I wouldn't have said this before the incentives passed, but, you know, it's just a great program, and it should bring that out-of-state business that we want here, because I've always said you can film anything in Wisconsin. We've got lakes, we've got the forests, we've got big cities, farms. So we don't have mountains. That's about it. So we could pretty much film anything here. And I hope that the film office, the new film office, is aggressive in recruiting projects to come here. I also hope, and I don't think there's money allocated for this, but that we ingrain this in our culture, in kids when they're young, and make this more of a cultural state. When you live in a cold weather state, I'm saying this after 3 days of hell, man, get people playing music and doing plays. And, you know, you learn the same lessons you do in sports or clubs. It's working together. It's collaborative. And if we instill that in kids, and there are people out there that do it, but I would like to see it even more so that this isn't an issue. When it comes time for the next vote, do we keep the incentives? Do we not? It's a no-brainer. Oh, yeah, this is who we are. That's how you keep incentives. Because the second the state needs money for infrastructure, we kind of saw this in Michigan. Oh, well, we'll just cancel the incentives. And that's not the way to do it.
So this is $5 million that has been set aside for filmmaking. What kind of impact is that going to make, Pete? Is that a starting point? Would you like to see it grow over the years? So what is your idea? What is your take on the $5 million?
I think it's a great start. I didn't live here at the time, but when they shot Public Enemies, the Michael Mann film, it was, the rumor has it, or as I understand it, that kind of used all the incentives. That took the whole budget.
Wow.
And I think now they've structured it differently, where I think you can get up to $1 million back on your project. There's $5 million that they've allocated. I believe you have to have a budget of at least $100,000 to qualify for the rebate. Not rebate, the credits. Yeah, and then, you know, so even if it's $1 million, if you get five bigger projects, that's at least five movies, not one. But I don't think it's going to be that. I think there's going to be a lot of money to go around to a lot of filmmakers. And one of the advantages you get when you film in your hometown or your home state, in Wisconsin at least, we're not jaded. You know, you mentioned a film I shot here, The Godfather of Green Bay, years ago. We shot up in Marinette. When we first started, everybody's like, what can I do? People can stay here. We'll make food. This is amazing. And by the end of the third week when we were done, it's like, how much longer are you guys going to be here? You know, that kind of thing. So, you know, it is a hassle sometimes, but I love that everybody at the moment is at least is behind it because, you know, the incentives are great, but also the local favors you get when you make a film are great too and save you a lot of money.
So, Pete, for people who aren't clear on the concept, we hear that term about tax credit for productions coming to your state or your town. What are they exactly?
There are several ways to mitigate risk when you raise money from people or private equity or whatever. You can get an actual rebate. You turn all your paperwork in. They see how much money you spent in that state. Like if it's a $100,000 budget and you spent 70 grand, they're going to give you whatever that percentage is. If it's 25%, they'll give you, well, whatever, 25% of $70,000
is.
You know,
carry
the one. Yeah.
The math ain't massive. So,
thank you, Parker.
Yeah. So it's just, and states do it differently. There are tax credits. There are out and out rebates. This is a form of tax credit where I believe you hand in your paperwork, then they sell that credit to a private company, and it's worked that way. I don't 100% understand that part. I'm hoping to know more about it this summer because I'm helping someone make a film.
Yeah,
we'll see what happens. I don't know. There's just different ways to do it, and I haven't heard of this way. But it sounds interesting, and, you know, we'll see how it goes.
We're talking with Pete Schwabe this morning. Of course, he is one of the hosts of Nightlight with Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach. He is also a filmmaker. We're talking about this new bipartisan effort to keep filmmaking in the state of Wisconsin. Because I know both of you have lived outside of Wisconsin, and I know you've both have been involved in other projects, I think this is, I want to get your take on this. Even with this $5 million incentive and this bipartisan effort, is Wisconsin still, though, playing catch-up compared to, obviously, other states that maybe already have these incentives?
Yeah, for sure. And better late than never, because I think how this could start working is, if you get filmmakers that, or people at studios or producers that are from Wisconsin that think it would be a kick to come back here and make a film, I think start there. I don't know what their strategy is for recruiting people, but that might be a good launching point to get things rolling because, yeah, like Georgia is way out ahead. I don't know if you guys remember, like Louisiana had pretty aggressive incentives and it seemed like for 10 years, every movie was shot in Louisiana.
Yep, everything
you could
was
almost
in New Orleans.
Smell the screen, and Nicolas Cage was there with a ponytail, and it was a nightmare. So, you know, I think Georgia has crushed it. New Mexico's done really well. But again, they've committed to it. It's part of their culture and fabric now. Interestingly enough, California had to, you know, they kind of took things for granted, I think. I'm generalizing. But, you know, they're coming back too now, and I think that will always be an obvious place where people want to shoot stuff because so many people live there. But Georgia and New Mexico have for sure crushed it. And Minnesota has different forms. We were looking about 7 years, 7 years ago, we were looking to shoot a film there because they have a state incentive, and then they have an incentive up in the Iron Range, an additional incentive. So it's like 30 and 25%. So you're not going to get 55% because you have to spend money out of state, but maybe you could get 40 of that. And that's when you go to an investor and say, we can guarantee 35 to 40% of this is coming back conservatively. That means something, you know, because then they're only investing a certain amount on their dollar.
Well, Pete, we would be remiss, and you know I hate being remiss, if we did not ask you about the Oscars the other night. Any big surprises? Anybody you thought got snubbed that should have won? How'd you feel about the whole ceremony?
You know, I don't like the word snubbed. Mostly just when you use it, but
understandable.
But remiss was great, Brian.
Thank you.
No, I think because snubbed is tough. They're being voted by their peers.
Right.
You could say Timothy Chalamet was snubbed, but was he? You know, Michael B. Jordan was great. I just watched Sinners again last night, and so you could say, was Ryan Coogler snubbed? No, because Paul Thomas Anderson had never won an Oscar either, and he's had a 35-year career. Yeah. So I don't think there were any snubs, but it was weird that Sean Penn just – it wasn't weird, actually. It was kind of on point
on
that he wasn't
for
even
him.
There. Yeah. But he was great. I had no problem with him winning. He was so good in that movie. And Delroy Lindo was great, too. But I think Sean Penn had more to do, so I kind of support that choice. But so many great films this year, and I don't. I will say this, Brian, and maybe you can relate to this. The comedy throughout the show, not good. The monologue was great, but the bits, oh my God, please stop. It's just, yeah.
Well, is so this, tedious. Is this where we get into two comedians critiquing other comedians? Is this...
No, because they're not comedians. Okay. Somebody writes stuff for people for who them. Aren't comedians, and they can't deliver it. And it's awkward, and it's stilted. And even the five women from Bridesmaids, who should...
Yeah, no, that was not good. Yeah. That was bad. That was really bad.
And that's what I'm saying. And a friend of mine said, "What are we at the point now where Nepo babies are writing this horrible... these bits because they just did not land.
Is there such a thing is that they're writing, I'm going to ask the two of you this in your expert opinion, is there such a thing that they're writing bits for something that they're too young to understand or remember?
That's a fair point. I don't know.
Maybe,
I don't know who the writers were.
I'm just
but
asking.
I know Greg Bach yesterday said he had friends who were on the writing team for the monologue, so those are good writers.
Sure.
I don't know about the rest of it, though. That's a good question.
Yeah, I don't know who the other writers are. Well, Pete, it's always a pleasure. What's on tap tonight quickly for Nightlight?
We've got Mace Michaels helping us relive the last 2 days, unfortunately. But Mace is always outstanding. And then we've got Rob Thomas, Madison film critic and CityCast Madison newsletter editor, talking Oscars. So it should be a lot of fun.
That's tonight at 5 on the Civic Media Network.
Thank you, guys.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Now back to more of Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:52 right now. Thank you so much for joining us. And hey, happy St. Patrick's Day. We're getting a lot of good feedback over on our social chatter and also in text messages. People loving the Irish music this morning.
Good picks by Parker.
Yeah.
Upbeat stuff sounds different than the normal the normal music.
It's fun
we
to
hear.
Switch it up a little bit.
It is. And it's also a good reminder there's a lot of great Irish music that is not the old drinking songs or Danny Boy.
Danny Boy.
I'm like the lead character Hugh Jackman in Song Sung Blue. There's so much more to Neil Diamond than Sweet Caroline. There's so much more to Irish music than Oh Danny Boy. And some of it really kicks. And so I'm glad people enjoyed it this morning. Thank you, Parker, for getting that all together. If you want to see more of us being us and not always talking about politics, because I think, Jamie, contrary to popular belief, this is not all we talk about. We don't just talk politics all day.
We're like actual people with actual lives that do actual things sometimes. Sometimes.
Yes.
I qualified it with sometimes.
No, you're right. We are actual people. I'm 100%, well, I can only speak for myself. I don't know if Parker has a lizard head under that fake humanoid mask that he's wearing.
What? Huh? How did you know?
I know. I blew your cover. But, so you can... On our YouTube or Facebook and Instagram pages right now, and I think, who knows where else it is, but go to Facebook and Instagram, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie. You can watch Jamie, who put together a video for Pie Day.
Yeah.
But she didn't do math.
No.
She actually tasted pies at a local Madison restaurant, and she gives her opinions, and we learn about the pies, and it makes you very hungry. So
very fun.
Watch this after you've had a little breakfast.
Tough gig is what that was.
I was going to say, did you get hazard pay? Or
no.
Did they give you a little something extra?
I should have, because I ate too much pie, but it was absolutely delicious. I don't regret a moment of it. So go check that out. But speaking of tough gigs, since it is St. Patrick's Day, here in about 6 minutes or so at 9 o'clock, you have a video that's going to be hitting our Facebook page because you got into the Irish roots of things and did a little whiskey taste testing for St. Patrick's Day. Everybody can check that out as well. Again, another tough gig, but you can get Brian's opinion on some really great whiskeys to partake in maybe with the corned beef and cabbage later tonight, which I've learned is that a traditional Irish fare?
No.
I didn't think so.
No, it's not. The corned beef came over here because it was a way to cure the meat to save it during passage, and it lasted longer through the winters. So that's why the brining and stuff for the corned beef. But now it's embraced over in Ireland now. People have corned beef, shepherd's pie, some bangers and mash, whatever you want to have today. If you just my only request, and this is just me being a purist and being surly, don't drink green beer.
That's so weird.
It's so dumb.
That's what the college students do, right? Because it's like cheap at the bar tonight. And
And listen.
Sorry, Parker, no offense.
I know.
If I were in college and it was cheap, I'd drink whatever was cheap.
Yeah.
But green beer is, it's a sign that you're.
Frank.
Oh, boy.
What kind of blasphemy is that, Brian?
Not to drink green beer?
Green beer.
First of all, beer isn't green. Second of all,
it is if, today.
No, it's not. That's a marketing ploy.
Rivers
it's,
aren't green
oh,
either,
look,
guys.
Look, people are, yeah.
Logic, right,
Parker.
Aren't green.
All right.
Logic, Parker.
No, the river is fine. The river is tradition. Okay. Green beer is just a marketing ploy. It adds nothing to the beer. It adds no flavor. It adds nothing except, oh, look, I'm Irish. I'm drinking something green. Have a shamrock shake. Get a cream de menthe. Have
Brian,
a grasshopper today.
In your life.
What's that?
Have some whimsy in your life.
Frank, whimsy is for whimsy is for children and the simple. That's who whimsy is for.
Does Brian look like the kind of guy who's going to take up whimsy in his life?
Yeah, when did I give you the impression that I'm whimsical?
You should have a little bit of whimsy.
You know what? I do have whimsy. Give me 3 pints of Guinness and I'll be the most whimsical man you have ever met.
Parker.
I'm dancing around. I'm flitting from place to place, Frank.
You and I go to a bar today.
Sure.
They have a special. The green beer is $3.
Yeah. Well,
are you taking that or are you taking the $7 Guinness you're going to be full after drinking half of it?
Now
there's stipulations.
Hold on.
Okay.
Hold on now.
Nothing I want to do Mr. more Man. Than chew on my beer.
First of all, you are wildly mislabeling Guinness. Wow. Guinness draft stout is 4.5% alcohol and 125 calories. It is barely more than your average light beer. Just because it's dark doesn't mean it's chewy and heavy. Why don't you have a little less whimsy and a little more fact-based reporting, Frank, when it comes to dissing one of the main exports, other than my family, from the Emerald Isle?
John over on our YouTube chat says Molly's in Oshkosh used to have $5 trays of beer, a fast food style plastic tray filled with plastic cups of beer, green on St. Patty's.
And
then
that.
He goes on to say it was also green the next day.
Yeah, because nobody bought it because it's just for marketing. Listen,
no,
if you want to drink it,
else.
Frank, he is. If you want to drink green beer, God bless you. You know, just don't parade around like it makes you an authentic Irishman.
It doesn't. That's why I wear a green shirt, to let everybody know.
That you are or aren't? Okay, all right.
I am.
Well, you know.
Yeah, that's it.
I was in Dropkick Murphys today.
Right.
You were in the Dropkick Murphys? Or you're listening to Dropkick Murphys?
Listening.
Oh, all right. Very good.
Well, enough green beer. You could be in Dropkick Murphys if that's really what you want to do today.
Why don't you just get a green Borg and walk around downtown, Frank? Pretend you're a real Irishman.
You've stolen so many.
They were. Oh, if you could wrestle them away from the cops.
Yeah.
I'm surprised the cops were shown pouring them out. I would have thought they were just putting them in the trunk like they used to do when they stopped us for buying beer.
Brian, there were videos of girls just crying, sobbing.
Because nothing says celebrate your heritage like a badly mixed Borg of booze and then you crying and letting your boyfriend fight on the train.
To wrap up this conversation, John says, crap beer is crap no matter the dye added, I guess. Well, you can't argue that. There
That's
you go.
A good point.
John, bravo, my friend.
Bringing it home. It is 8:59 right now. This has been another great, we'll call it edition of Daybreak here on the Civic Media Network. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Have a wonderful rest of your St. Patrick's Day. Thank you for listening. Enjoy.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.